This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
We had a conversation with Anya Lisiswana some time ago, and from that conversation emerged a real need to delve into the concept of intergenerational trauma when it pertains to race and some of the apartheid impact that has been had in our lives as Black people. So, okay, the time, 20-something years since apartheid officially ended, right? And by many accounts, the novelty of the new South Africa, this rainbow, it's kind of worn off. So it's widely accepted that the racially inspired injustices profoundly traumatized all South Africans and all Black South Africans particularly. It can be argued that one aspect of the past that needs to be dealt with is the long-term traumatic impact of the violence that usually accompanied civil strife. And we see that even this week, we saw that with the Wits protests, that violence is perpetuated. Trauma affects genetic processes, leading to traumatic activity and reactivity being heightened in populations who experience a great deal of trauma. So symptoms of intergenerational trauma begin with the survivor of the trauma. It tends to manifest as symptoms of PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. That can be intrusive thoughts, reliving the trauma over and over and over, being fearful, being paranoid. Those are just some of the symptoms of PTSD. Sometimes trauma in the second generation is deemed as a traumatic response to parental trauma. So if you think about high levels of maternal stress, if you think about, antisocial behavior that comes from of seeing strife between your parents, for example, and we know how the family system was broken down so much by the apartheid regime. So all of these aspects of trauma definitely are still having a direct impact on how we live today. So we're talking about that intergenerational race trauma, what it means, how we can start working through it, how we can start identifying it and talking through it without shame and without blame, and understanding what our role is to a healing space. Anya Lisiswana joins us now, a clinical psychologist. And of course, your calls are always welcome. Your comments are always welcome. Your experiences are always welcome on 0861 987 000. Anele, welcome back.
Good morning.
Great. So let's talk a little bit about identifying or seeing some of those unresolved emotions and thoughts about a history of trauma.
I think for me, the first thing that I discovered as I was preparing myself to talk to this is I am one of the victims of intergenerational trauma. From a distant perspective, as an outsider, as an insider. And I asked myself, why am I feeling this rage? I said, the probably reason why I'm a psychologist is because of my perspective and a discursive understanding that psychology is political. Probably if there was a branch of psychology that is called political psychology as a specialty, I would have been one.
Yes. Because
of the rage that I understood, that I was not in the struggle. My great-grandparents, my parents, and people around me from history and as time tells and what we know of the evidence of what happened, I always become angry when it comes to the issue of race. And the reason why I become angry, the impact of what happened in the past, post-1994, it still felt and it's a reality for many Black bodies in South Africa. And not to say that other bodies don't feel it, but we have daily reminders and experiences that remind us of what we come from and what happened in the past. So academically, I thought I can't really speak from my head without engaging with what literature has written about beyond my lived experience. There's a study that you should get hold of. It's called Exploring the Silence of Intergenerational Trauma Among Children and Grandchildren of Victims of Apartheid-Era Gross Human Rights Violation. It was published in 2016 by Cyril Kenneth Adonis. As I was reading this article, I was angry. And because I stepped away from, actually a little bit, from being the pure or kind of clinical psychologist that understands symptoms and diagnose. But I understood that our understanding of intergenerational trauma, it's socio-political. There's no way that we can use a pure medical perspective to understand and unpack this. Because from the findings of what I found is the impact of secondary traumatization, like what you described as the show was starting. If you read what the participants explained in terms of secondary traumatization, it's a very difficult situation where, yes, your parents were taken to exile, things happened, and all you know is the trauma of losing a parent that you don't know. And all that you see in the news is everything, speculations around your parents' death. And later you discover that indeed this person is no more. And later in life, you've got to engage whether you can be compensated for what happened. It cannot take the severity. If we can do interviews, even now, of children from NKs, children of people that went to exile, they still feel the impact of the secondary traumatization. And one of the things that I found also is it's the socio-economic impact of what that it did. The reason why we're still poor, the reason why there's still poverty, it's traced as far from those small moments of what really happened. And some of the participants say, had it been for my father that he was there, had it been for my mother, had it been for my sister, my life would not have been the same or the same of where it is now. So can you see the gravity of what intergenerational trauma presents like post-1994? At the same time, there's powerlessness and helplessness that, actually, I can't bring this person back. There are so many traumatic experiences that trace as far or as to deep, deep-seated anger. I don't understand. I don't blame it when other people say, I'll never forgive a certain race. I will never get over this situation. The reason why this week we had protests at university, it is because we don't know any other thing as a student post-1994 of how to engage Senate, of how to engage vice chancellors to ask. All that we know, violence is the only way that the language of students can be heard. Since 2015, this is my fall.
Yes.
In 2021, we're still speaking of the same thing, because during those conversations around Christmas fall, there was no conversation that said, how do we help these learners, these students, to give them a language that violence is not the only way of engaging with people of high authority? And who is in authority? The systems and structures of these universities is predominantly still on the Western Eurocentric perspective in all of that, which do not have a reservation for black bodies when they say they do not have money. So how do I fight my enemy? It's through protest. Through violence.
Do you feel, Aneta, that perhaps because of this trauma, intergenerational race trauma, that we've got leaders who have not acknowledged that they themselves are traumatized, therefore their style of leadership will be exactly like the apartheid regime under the guise of democracy? Because when you look at just policing and how it's done, when you look at how the Minister of Police addresses us, taxpaying citizens, as though we are servants or we are subservient in some way, they've inherited that trauma, and ultimately it filters down to society.
The challenging thing for me, Danielle, is that probably the victims of the intergenerational trauma themselves, or those ones who were in the fire line, they have normalized that trauma. They have not even been given a chance post-1994. For me, as someone that probably did not really felt the lived experiences of what it was like. For me, TRC was just putting a plaster in a bleeding wound, right? And we thought, from that perspective, and again, who went to TRC, right? Many people who really got the impact and felt the realities of what it was like, they never got the chance of the one-on-one through TRC. Professor Pinon Kobota Matigizel and many others, Professor Sakhalos, they've written extensively about this. For me, the reason why we're finding ourselves in where we are, there was never a chance and a time and proper following and proper check-in to understand the psychological impact. But what was done, we tried to do other things, to think that we are responding by having PEEs, by having all of these black things. But the reality is we never focused on the mental health of those who were involved in the struggles, their families. And I understand, again, my point, that we will still have the recycling and reappearance of these traumatic experiences,
yes,
of these racial tensions, as much as we can be enlightened, as much as we can be educated. But certain races, when a black body thinks about that particular race, there's a race that comes in. I don't understand. So for those things to me, and I also as a person, as a citizen, and as one that has experienced and seen this, whether as an insider and an outsider, I still have my own residual things that I'm very angry at certain things, especially when it comes into race, because even my profession of psychology is political. Race is a problem. My profession, in terms of how many clinical psychologists do you see? Very few, right? Even to get in as a black body in clinical psychology, there's a problem. Even for people to afford me, there's a problem because there's an economic, psychosocial variant underneath that makes these people hard to come and see me. So all of these things are systemic, and their systemic perspective plays out in ways in which we see where we are today.
It's very interesting because, yes, they are systemic, and there is a double traumatization that happens because of the denial that other races, and sometimes we have now, you know, adopted that we can't say the past has had an impact on what is happening today. And it becomes this double traumatization because for many of us, it is obvious in that, you know, this was your grandfather or this was your mother, but system-wise, it is definitely as a result of where we come from.
Oh, yes. The simple thing that I can say, Tavi, it's a matter of, for me, how do you confront the person who gives you bread and butter, who makes you feel that this bread and butter that you have is a privilege, right? That's where the problem starts for me. Sorry. And again, how do you confront realities when you need to survive, right? So do I need to bother myself to ask about these difficult things that I don't have answers to instead of getting this bread? I don't even ask what kind of brand is it. All the other party that gives this bread knows that I need bread. So it becomes a tit-for-tat kind of a thing that, why are you even crying? Because I gave you bread.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Can we talk about in particular parenting, right? So if we are talking about an intergenerational trauma, from how the children of the 80s were parented by the kids who were, you know, teenagers and in their 20s in the 70s, right? Yeah. So we've been parented in a very specific way by very affected individuals, right? And they, of course, were parented by those who perhaps would remember, you know, being forcibly removed or, you know, having land taken away. So there's an intergenerational trauma there. Let's talk about some of the effects that is currently having in how complicated those parent-child relationships and emotional attachments are.
Ask yourself, where did it start, or why do we have child-headed households? It's not a new phenomenon, right? It's a phenomenon that traces as far as back. HIV and everything that research has proven to us, it's fine. but this is where it all started. What happened to the kids of the cadres and people who went to exile that left their children behind? What were those families termed as, right? For me, childhood is hot homes. Mm-hmm. Now, those that were left behind, children who had to raise their siblings, they had to recover from their own experiences of not being parented. And now, how do you parent when you are not parented yourself, right? You, and again, from the context of what happened in apartheid, they parented from a place of anger. Mm-hmm. They parented from a place of resentment. They parented from a place of rage and survival. Even those that they were raising, their realities and their day-to-day confrontations, they were under the gaze of rage. When would this end? Even when that ended, we did not go back to those children and ask, how was it like to be raised in this context? Mm. How was it like to experience all of that which you experienced, and what did the government post-1994 do to follow up and do programs that would have spoke to how do you then have a healthy relationship with yourself, even for those that you're raising? That was never done. Mm. And the reason why, decades after, we still speak about the impact of what apartheid did to us as a community and as a society and as a country, mm. we will still speak about these residual effects, because a number of things that were critical at that time were never addressed.
Mm. And in many ways, you know, perhaps that's what the TRC was actually supposed to do, right? So you know, possibly you begin with identifying what the issue is, having that moment of talking to each other, whatever it is. And then, as you say, expanding it to keeping in touch and healing and having the therapies and whatnot. And it I don't know, is that a leadership thing? Is that not what is the most important in terms of building an economy and moving forward and being competitive in the world? How do you view that? Or does that almost not even matter because we find ourselves where we find ourselves?
It was more like we have better issues to talk about.
You see,
right?
Yeah.
We've got black economic empowerment to talk about.
Yeah.
We have RCP to talk about, right?
Which is kind of what we find ourselves with, you know, mental health versus you've got to go to work, right? So it is that issue, yeah.
Even for me, even if you take it to the to higher education, mm. why do we still have issues with masters, right? Mm. Because even the funding mentality or the funding grounds of national student financial aid system, it bases from as far as injustices of the past, right? Mm. Now, even that funding is not sufficient to address those kids or those learners who may come from this history that is still so real to them, that the reason why they are fighting is that they feel entitled that our grandfathers and our forefathers fought for this, mm. right? That's why we're talking about free quality education, because it was promised to us. Mm. So if that is not happening, we're going to demand it. But we are not told and trained and socialized on how to demand this in a healthy way. But the only way that we know, we're going to protest, because what we know of fires, we know of everything else that we have been exposed to. So we're going to continue with that. But going to what you did ask, eventually, it is only now that we have realized in South Africa the depth and the need of mental health services to address and redress all of these psychosocial, political, systemic problems that are so evident in every aspect of our lives, in our professions, in our day-to-day lives, and everything else, that even when you are a privileged black body, you still have some kind of, it feels like you've done something wrong, right?
Yes.
That's how I feel.
You're living with blackness. Your cardinal sin is your blackness, no matter where you are, no matter how you speak, your education.
I need black darkness. It feels like I need a lot of cleansing to undo some of my difficulties of racial tenets and many other things that I battle with. Mm. But because of psychologists who are trained to be neutral, to understand, even when I was training, I had a lot of questions. And even now, when certain races don't come to my practice, I understand that my body is problematic.
Mm.
It was constructed to believe that this kind of psychologist, when you see this pigmentation, there's a problem with it.
Mm.
So, Anela, how then do we draw the line? Because there's that intergenerational trauma which plays itself out in society, which is what we saw especially this week. But there must still be personal accountability.
Yeah.
How do you draw the line between that trauma which we see playing itself out and then just an individual making certain choices, which also could be influenced by other things, but not particularly the trauma we experience as a nation?
One, it really needs a very holistic perspective in terms of dealing with this. If you look at TRC, some of the foundations, there was a very theological, religious aspect of it in terms of bringing forgiveness and facilitating that part, because it spoke to well-being of those that had rage, that had anger and resentment and all of that. We still need that. And I believe that religious and faith groups in South Africa have a lot to play. Indigenous, or can call it traditional leaders, and they also have a role to play in such spaces and contexts. We need psychologists. This country needs psychologists that are responsive to the needs of whatever that the country needs. I mean, even in our profession, before you qualify as a clinical psychologist, we do what is called community service. Ideally, community service was done to create access and increase the number of psychologists available in clinics and in government hospitals and all of that. It's still effective. It's working. I would love our communities to make use of that. And I believe that conversations that are geared at having practical ways of dealing with these things can help. In our curriculum, in our engagements with in political studies and all, let us have our own history written in those textbooks. Let us have our academics be more proactive in terms of giving us tools of how to engage with these things that we thought we are over it. How do we go back and rethink how we engage with literature for the next generation to see a therapeutic kind of academic engagement rather than in kind of literature and journal articles that remind us this is where we come from? But we need conversation that helps us to see how do we readdress after these decades the impact of what still is left from what happened in the past.
You know, psychology is a STEM discipline, right? And we're all talking about science, technology, engineering, mathematics. It's, you know, we push. And I don't know if psychology is being pushed that much, because what you're talking about is exactly what the country needs. In as much as, you know, moving the economy a certain way, that political psychology, having people who are healers from the historical vantage point with that lived experience and understanding, as well as, you know, a medical and scientific background. That's exactly what's needed. You've been so enlightening today, and, you know, no doubt we're going to be friends forever. So you must come back and we must have this conversation in different iterations moving forward. Anela Siswana, our clinical psychologist, talking about intergenerational race trauma. That's what it is. Intergenerational race trauma on Power Weekend Breakfast. Have a good Sunday. Have a good one.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.